Hello, everyone. Thank you for taking time today to join in this conversation. I'm Val Avery, President of the Health Sciences Association of BC. Welcome to HSA's town hall meeting to discuss the tentative agreement that your union has negotiated for BC's health science professionals. Tonight, the HSA is holding this telephone town hall to report on the highlights of the agreement and to hear your questions about the proposed contract. This will be an interactive conversation, so if you'd like to ask a question, just press 9 on your phone at any time to let us know you'd like to speak on the call. If you don't want everyone to hear your comments, you will have a chance to leave me a message at the end of this event. Because we are calling thousands of you, sometimes people get dropped off the line. If that should happen, just dial 1-888-772-5578 to be reconnected. This is Val Avery, President of the Health Sciences Association of BC, and you are now in the telephone town hall. Later in the call, you will be hearing from our chief negotiator, Jeannie Myers, who will present the elements of the tentative agreement and take your questions. More HSA members are joining the conversation. Imagine it's like an actual town hall where people are coming into the room. Once everyone has joined, we will begin the meeting with an overview of the tentative agreement before we take your questions. Your HSA bargaining committee and board of directors is recommending you vote yes to the agreement. We believe it is a good deal that provides a modest wage increase and protects benefits. For those of you just joining our conversation, this is Val Avery, President of the Health Sciences Association of BC, and we'd like to answer your questions about the tentative agreement your union has negotiated with the employer. Please press 9 on your phone to ask a question. Because we have thousands of people on the call, sometimes people get dropped off. If that should happen, just dial 1-888-772-5578 to be reconnected. Following the town hall meeting, I urge you to review the tentative agreement on the HSA website at hsabc.org. Your chief negotiator, Jeannie Myers, will go over key parts of the tentative agreement during this telephone town hall. She will be taking your questions live. This is Val Avery, President of the Health Sciences Association of BC, and I want to hear from you about HSA's tentative agreement on a new 5-year contract. Just press 9 on your phone if you'd like to get in line to ask a question. We'll begin with an outline of the contract followed by questions from you in just a couple of minutes while we wait for more members to join the event. When the telephone town hall is underway, we will talk about the contract at length. So please stay on the phone if you'd like to hear about the tentative agreement in detail and how it will affect you. Plus, you will also be able to pose questions to HSA's chief negotiator, Jeannie Myers, by pressing 9 on your phone. This is Val Avery, President of the Health Sciences Association of BC, and before we go to your questions, I will introduce your chief negotiator, Jeannie Myers, who will spend a few minutes outlining the tentative agreement. Because we have thousands of people on the call, sometimes people do get dropped off. If that should happen, just dial 1-888-772-5578 to be reconnected. We are almost ready to begin, but we need to wait another minute or so for the last remaining members to join the conversation. I and your bargaining committee are very much looking forward to hearing your views on the tentative contract. Remember, if you'd like to take part in the conversation, press 9 on your phone now to get in line to ask a question once our negotiator has presented the tentative agreement your bargaining committee is putting forward for your consideration. Or just listen to what other members in the town hall have to say. For those of you just joining the telephone town hall, this is Val Avery, President of the Health Sciences Association of BC, your host for tonight's conversation on the tentative agreement. Before we start, I want to welcome the thousands of HSA members who are participating in tonight's town hall meeting to discuss the tentative agreement. If you want to read up on the proposed contract, visit the HSA website at hsabc.org. Okay, so this is Val Avery, President of the Health Sciences Association of BC. I'll now be turning the floor over to HSA's chief negotiator, Jeannie Myers, who will first present the elements of the agreement and then take your questions. And don't forget, at any time on this call, you can press 9 on your phone if you would like to get in line to speak directly with us. Hi, Jeannie. Welcome to tonight's HSA town hall meeting.
Thank you, Val. I'm very happy to be here and to be able to answer questions from our members. I thought that I would talk a little bit about how the tentative agreement came to be negotiated. before we go right into the particulars of the agreement. I have here with me the part of the Bosling team. I have Dennis Blatchford, Allison Heitman, Julio Trujillo, and Kathy McLennan. And they will also be able to answer questions with respect to some of the more specialized language in the collective agreement that's being put out to you for ratification. Around the end of August, the government did start approaching some unions to discuss early negotiations. It was the case that a number of unions, including HSA and the HSTBA, were interested in looking at whether or not there was a value to us to go into early negotiations. We had come through a number of rounds of very difficult bargaining. Because we have been bargaining since 2010 under wage controls, basically, whether or not the government calls them net zero mandate, cooperative gains, nonetheless, we've had some very difficult rounds. And in the 2012 to 2014 round of bargaining, although we were happy with some of the gains that were made, we were happy with the improvements to the on-call language, happy with shift differential. For many of our members, they were happy with having an increased work week. That meant more money. We had an improved classifications committee process that was going to be going forward. There were certainly advantages, but there were also some disadvantages that left us with residual problems. And we knew at the time we were bargaining in 2012, 2013, that these were residual problems. We knew, for example, that because of the very tight restrictions on monetary benefits, we had not been able to secure enough funding for representatives to our enhanced disability management program, which I will refer to hereafter as EDMP. We knew as well that the PharmaCare tie-in, which had been agreed to at the nurses' table, and when I say nurses, I mean the Nurses Bargaining Association table, was not going to be a positive thing for our members. We struggled very hard to avoid having the PharmaCare tie-in imposed on us, but in the end, it was made very clear that the government was going to move to the PharmaCare tie-in, and all unions were going to go to the PharmaCare tie-in, whether they wanted to or not. Now, the same thing was true of the 37.5-hour work week. It was a feature of the collective agreements. It had been imposed on the Facilities Bargaining Association in 2004. It was negotiated with the Nurses Bargaining Association in 2012, and it was abundantly clear that there would be no deal made that did not have a 37.5-hour work week in it. Those were problems. We also had problems with respect to benefits and the cost of benefits. In order, under the cooperative gains mandate, to be able to make any improvements to the collective agreement, it was necessary to enter into a cost-sharing formula, really, with the health authorities. And we weren't prepared to make any cuts to the collective agreement. We did enter into the PharmaCare tie-in, but we didn't enter into that willingly. What we did say was, we know there's savings. We know there's savings that can be achieved, and we know there's savings that can be achieved through our application of the Enhanced Disability Management Program. We know there are savings that can be achieved through the introduction of wellness programs and initiatives. We believe there are savings that can be achieved, administrative savings, if we can take a look at how the Health Benefits Trust and Pacific Blue Cross are administering our benefits. We agreed that we would enter into a committee process to achieve savings, which were then used to fund the changes that were positive changes that we wanted in the collective agreement. But the total value of that was 0.42% of payroll, so it was $3.8 million. Now, we had a committee process by which the parties were supposed to meet and exchange proposals, and as soon as the election result was announced, really on May 14th, what we found was that the Ministry of Health was coming to us with their hands outstretched saying, well, we're not too interested in the proposals now. We just want $3.8 million in cuts. We had Vince Reddy on as an arbitrator, and we were confident that we would get a fair enough hearing from him, but at the end of the day, the dollar value had to be found somewhere. And so we were concerned about that. We wanted to deal with that as a residual issue. We wanted to be able to deal with it in a way that was consistent with what we had negotiated, which was to be able to look at administrative savings, wellness plans, change of carriers, those types of changes in our benefits to client savings. We wanted to be able to find some way to fix the PharmaCare tie-in, which had begun to pose a problem to us as the grace period came rolling to an end, and the grace period ended August 31st. So there were a number of features from the previous collective agreement that were troublesome to us. That coupled with the fact that we are dealing with a government that is has been introducing wage controls now for a number of years, has no intention apart from making monies available through this economic stability dividend proposal that's been signed onto by the public sector unions that have now got tentative agreements with the government. But apart from that, this government is very strict on wage controls. The only real way to achieve further monies is through market adjustments, dealing with skills shortages, recruitment and retention. We want to be able to deal with those problems in a positive way. We wanted to be able to stop this bargaining cycle, which saw us every year either ratifying an agreement, preparing for bargaining, or actually in active bargaining with all the other tables. And we weren't alone, because we were at the bargaining table, and so was the BCGU, bargaining for the master agreement, and also the Community Bargaining Association and the Community Social Services Employers Association bargaining group. So it was not just HSA that was bargaining, and we met in a preliminary way at the beginning of September and decided that there was enough that could be achieved if we could get some indication from our stewards and activists that having a contract extension going early would be advantageous. So we called stewards down on September 18th, and we had a meeting, and we said, here's the opportunity that presents itself. The government's looking for a five-year deal. The government's looking for labor peace. The government's looking for a mandate that they are confident they can fund. And they are prepared to look at bargaining on certain areas that we have identified as particularly problematic. One is protection for benefits. One is fixes for the PharmaCare tie-in. More resources for enhanced disability management. Solutions for recruitment and retention. We said to the stewards, and we had said to the government earlier, if we are going to be looking at early negotiations and a longer-term collective agreement, then we're not going to be doing it unless we have some protection in the form of a MeToo to the BCGEU master agreement and the Nurses Bargaining Association. And that was another area in which we had an early indication that we would be able to get an agreement. So after our meeting with the stewards September 18th, we did enter into negotiations. And we had a number of weeks of bargaining. We brought our bargaining committee from the previous round in, and we ended up negotiating an agreement that was signed on November 8th. Now, the highlights of that agreement are, of course, sent out to you in the ratification package, but the tentative agreement itself is posted on the webpage. And the term of the collective agreement, if you have to go to the webpage to see the particulars of the tentative agreement, the full particulars. The term is, of course, 5 years. The wages are 5.5% over 5 years. And then there is economic stability dividends in 4 of those years. There is also an improvement to the number of EDMP representatives. It has doubled. The classifications committee continues on. We've negotiated an expedited process to help deal with your classification grievances in a more timely manner. We have negotiated a recruitment and retention committee that has the ability to establish wage improvements and adjustments during the life of the collective agreement. The pharmacare tie-in has been fixed in a way that we find quite satisfactory. Drugs that are on the pharmacare formulary are, of course, compensated at 100%, which is an improvement over the 80% of drugs that were previously covered by Pacific Blue Cross under your benefit plan. Now, there are drugs that are not on the formulary. That was what we knew would happen, and we were concerned about it. What we have managed to negotiate is a 50% reimbursement, which will be retroactive to September 1st if this agreement is ratified. So that's a very, very substantial improvement in the pharmacare tie-in. In the area of benefits, we had to deal with the $3.8 million. We said to the government, we have no intention of sitting here and letting $3.8 million be cut from the benefit packages in the sense of caps or slashes. We knew there were savings, however, that could be found, and we said we want to look at a more innovative way to deal with it, and we began to discuss the idea of a joint benefit trust. As we went through those discussions with respect to the joint benefit trust, it became clear that that was something that we might be able to achieve, and we said the $3.8 million, which is an annualized figure, $3.8 million, will have to be deemed to be satisfied. And as a result of the negotiations, the $3.8 million was indeed deemed to be satisfied, and we are no longer required to look for $3.8. Now, what we do have to do is set up a joint benefit trust. And that is no small undertaking. It is going to be accomplished in the following way. For a 2-year period, there's going to be a working group that is funded to the tune of $400,000. That is to pay for lawyers, actuaries, and get the trust to the point where it can be operationalized. During that time, benefits will continue to be provided by the Health Benefits Trust, which I may refer to, or some of our other speakers may refer to as CHBT. And after that, the Joint Benefits Trust, the new Joint Benefits Trust, will take over and will be charged with administering all benefits. In order to do its job, the working group has negotiated, and I will tell you that it was a very important point. It was a very key point. We said we have to have full disclosure of all of the information that is available to us by either the existing Health Benefits Trust or its service providers such as Pacific Blue Cross, Great West Life. And that was eventually agreed to. It took many, many hours of negotiating to get that agreed to. The benefits, the current benefits, without any modification of any kind whatsoever will simply continue on until April 1st, 2016. After that, because the Joint Benefit Trust kicks in, it may be that it's conceivable that there could be some change in benefits, but there is no requirement that there be cuts that are found by changes, modifications to benefits. What the Joint Benefit Trust intends to do is to ensure that it has accurate information and visibility, transparency with respect to the cost of benefits, usage, and can be in a position to change carriers, look for other carriers, and make administrative savings. It can continue at its option to use the services provided by the Health Benefits Trust. It is not required to use Health Benefits Trust. If you have a question at any time, you can press 9 and you'll be added into the queue. There was a change that was made to the tentative agreement that resulted from the discussions that were being that were underway between the BC GEU at the Community Bargaining Association table and the government and HCABC. And because we had in the agreement a Me Too provision, and it was very clear to the government when we were negotiating that if there were significant improvements, we would be looking for them as well. So we were able to import it into our agreement, and that was the assumption by the employer of part of the LTD risk. We don't know if there will be LTD risk, but if there is, from the period of 2017 to 2019, the employer will be picking up the first 2% of any increase in benefit costs. So that was the change that was added into the tentative agreement, and we have put information on the website so that you will be aware that the tentative agreement that is posted now that you're voting on is slightly modified, certainly modified for the better, over the one that was originally on the website when the ratification packages were mailed out. The other change that you will see in the tentative agreement that was posted on Tuesday is that the fourth economic stability dividend that you would have seen referred to in the memo, but which had been left off the face of the tentative agreement, has now been added on. Both of those are changes that are improvements for the better. Those are, I would say, the highlights of the collective agreement. There is a recruitment and retention process. There is a Me Too. And there is certainly improved commitment to disability management staff. So I believe that for most of the HSA members, this is going to be an agreement that ensures that their benefits can be preserved, ensures that the pharmacare tie-in is not going to be adverse, ensures that the enhanced disability management program will be able to function, ensures that your wages are going to be, while we don't say, and no one who has negotiated any of the tentative agreements this fall with the government says that a 5.5% over 5 years is a particularly attractive settlement, that's the settlement that we're going to see in the public sector. And so we have that. And we have to keep in mind that in other jurisdictions, even though sometimes our members look to Alberta, they look to Ontario, and they think, oh, the wages are very much better. But in fact, what we do see in Alberta is that the government has just introduced very repressive legislation that is going to have the potential to really make collective bargaining almost impossible to recognize as collective bargaining. That would be all I would say, I think, about the summary. I do have with me some of our specialized staff, and I think we will be in a position to answer your questions at any time. You can press 9, and you will be added into the queue. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeannie, for that overview of the tentative agreement. And we'll go to questions now. And the first call will be coming from Freeman in Taylor, BC. Are you there, Freeman?
Yes, I am.
Okay, go ahead with your question, please, to Jeannie Myers.
Yeah, I'm calling, Freeman, calling from Taylor, BC. I'm a physiotherapist working at the hospital here. To be honest with you, I'm quite shocked to see the 5.5 wage increase over 5 years. So that's 1.1% per year. That's lower than inflation. That's lower than inflation during recession year. But I thought, well, you guys are kidding me. So it's funny. You see, you always present the perceived benefit, but you never point out what was the shortcomings in the agreement that you signed. Well, I mean, you apparently the bargaining.
And we'll let Jeannie respond to your question about the wages.
Right.
Thank you. Thank you. As I said when I started speaking, the difficulty with negotiating these days in British Columbia is that we are dealing with mandates. Mandates are set by the provincial government. There are upper limits on what is negotiable. In this particular round, the government has set a mandate of 5.5% over 5 years. And the 5.5% that has been negotiated for the health science professionals is exactly the same as the 5.5% that we are seeing in the BCGEU master and that we are seeing in the CBA and the community social services agreement. There are, however, possibilities for more monies. There are possibilities through this economic stability dividend that the government is rolling out. We are also able to say that the Recruitment and Retention Committee may provide a opportunity for groups where there are skills shortages, and PT is one of those groups, to call the committee together to make presentations to TSEC, which is the Public Sector Employers Council, and thereby achieve further monies during the course of the agreement. I also want to address your point about the cost of living and inflation, because this is something that we hear quite a bit, that the wage increases do not keep pace with the cost of living or inflation, and it simply has not been the case. Since 2001, although the wage increases have not looked particularly impressive, nonetheless, the total wage increases for all health science professionals has totaled no less than 24.65%. There have been some groups that have been actually higher. There were market adjustments in 2006 for pharmacists, for example. The cost of living in BC during that period was 20.57%. So, I mean, one has to have a larger view, and although 5.5% over 5 years may not look particularly attractive, it is that is the base. It is the same base for all of the bargaining units in the public sector. There is a possibility of more money through the economic stability dividend. And there is also the possibility that through the operation of the Recruitment and Retention Committee, which is not something that we have ever had before, there may be opportunities to realize more money. So I am hoping that that helps you to make your decision. Thank you.
Thanks, Jeannie. I'll remind callers on the line that if you want to ask a question, press 9 on your phone. Our next call is Denise in Port Alberni. Denise, can you go ahead with your question to Jeannie Myers, please?
Yes, thank you for hosting the town hall. My question is regarding benefits. You have addressed some of my question in your opening speech, but I'm finding it very hard to be convinced to vote yes when not everything in this contract is clear, specifically benefits. I understand no changes till after the 16th, but you don't know what changes there will be then. And I'm still reeling from a significant shortfall from the 37.5-hour work week as a part-timer, and it was difficult to vote. You know, I voted yes on that, and it turned out to be nothing at all like what I was told it would be. So I'm concerned about how the benefits are going to be laid out after 2016.
Thank you, Denise. So thank you very much. I am going to have Dennis Blatchford address your question. But before I ask him to come on the line, I do want to just say a word about the 37.5-hour work week. We also are concerned about the way it has rolled out in many health authorities. We have filed quite a number of grievances. What we have found is that there are incidences of structural changes being introduced in the workplace, characterized as implementation of a 37.5-hour work week. We're concerned about process. We're concerned about layoffs that we say are improper. And what we have just negotiated is an expedited process to deal with the 37.5-hour grievances. I am going to assume that you may have filed one, as you have said that you were affected adversely by it. And those grievances will be dealt with as quickly as we can by arbitrator mediator Vince Reddy. All of the constituent unions and the HSPBA will be involved in that process. So we will get more information out to you about that process in the early new year. And now I think I will ask Dennis Blatchford if he can address your questions, concerns about what changes might be in the in 2016.
Hi, this is Dennis Blatchford, and I am the pension and benefits advocate for HSA. And just by way of a little bit of background, I am your representative on the municipal pension plan as your trustee, and have been in joint trusteeship in that capacity with employers from across the province since 2001. So I'm quite familiar with joint trusteeship and the benefits thereof. Your question is a very good one, and I take it that your part-time status is making you feeling some insecurity over the future of your benefits for part-time work. And I will say that the employer on many occasions have come to with solutions for benefit reductions by speaking about the possibility of reducing benefits to part-timers. And I want to say that in every forum that that has been raised, it has been rejected, both in the Joint Benefit Review and in various other places where those types of notions are talked about. We think that's counterproductive to their efforts to maintain employees, current employees, and to attract employees, and it would be completely counterproductive if they were to do such a scheme. So I can say with some assurance that certainly under the Joint Benefits Trust, that would not be a considered option by your representatives at the Joint Benefit Trust.
Thank you, Dennis. We're now going to go to Anne, who has a question about the Me Too clause in the tentative agreement. Are you there, Anne?
Yes, I am. Thank you for calling, taking my call. I don't see that we are any way linked to the nurses' bargaining. They have recently become so far ahead of us where we were usually traditionally a certain percentage within one another. I find that disturbing that this appears to be that it's going to continue to happen, that we are not at all linked to percentages that the nurses might gain in their bargaining. Can you address that, please? Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Anne. I'm happy to address that. We have, of course, been keeping a close eye on the nurses' bargaining for a number of years. We were not happy in 2009, obviously, when they managed to negotiate significant wage increases just before the government imposed the net zero mandate that caught the rest of us. So what we have done in this agreement is we have written in a me too to the nurses. So if there are any wage adjustments beyond the 5.5% over 5 years that is part of the mandate, then that will flow through to us as well. The other thing I do want to say, and I do say that for our RPNs who are in the Nurses Bargaining Association, I'm glad to see that there are some improvements that have been recently negotiated by the NBA. However, they are not as significant, unfortunately, as the pharmacare tie-in benefits that we were able to negotiate at the HSP table. And it's interesting to note that in order to get those improvements at the NBA table, part of the agreement is that really the nurses' table has paid for those improvements themselves out of what they call their residual monies, which I believe was part of the monies negotiated in 2009. So, you know, we have to just always continually watch what is going on at the other tables. None of the tables bargain in isolation anymore, and we certainly do not bargain in isolation from the nurses' table, and we are me-too'd to the Nurses Bargaining Association. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jeannie. I would remind callers on the line that you can press 9 at any time to ask a question. We're going to go to Patricia in Burnaby next. Patricia, can you please ask your question of Jeannie Myers?
Yes, thank you. Jeannie, it's been kind of vague about, like you say, there's no change in our benefits. However, it says till 2016. And the rumor that I was addressed in our place of work is the fact that you were thinking of changing our sick time back to where it was first suggested by the government, that we have 80% of our days paid and that we don't have full coverage. I'd like to know if that is what's in the plan for the benefits change in 2016.
Thank you. Thank you very much. First of all, there is no plan for benefits change in 2016. What there is a provision in the Joint Benefits Trust that says that there can be no change whatsoever of any kind until the Joint Benefits Trust is operationalized, and that happens to be in 2016. However, sick leave, although it is considered in the broader sense to be a benefit, a monetary benefit under the collective agreement, sick leave is not a benefit that is going to be captured by the trust. The benefits that are going to be brought in under the trust are long-term disability, accidental death and dismemberment, we refer to it as AD&D, extended health, dental, life insurance, not sick leave. And in fact, with a five-year agreement, there cannot be any change to your sick leave, to your vacation, to the sick leave payouts. They are absolutely solidly protected until the next round of bargaining, which if this deal is ratified, will be in 2019. I know there's been rumors going around about that, and we have tried to address them wherever we can because it is absolutely a complete misconception, and it is not even possible for a change to be introduced to sick leave plans during the life of this collective agreement if it's ratified. So I hope that gives you some comfort.
Thank you, Jeannie. Jeannie, I have a question that was left by a member who was on the line, and they said, we've been working short-staffed in our department for more than a year. Our hospital just can't hire enough people to fill the vacancies. Is there anything in this tentative agreement that helps? We've already gotten behind other provinces in wages, and this wage increase doesn't even start to address that gap. Could you respond, please, Jeannie?
Yes, thank you. I will. And it's very much the case that for many of our disciplines, skill shortages are being experienced, and it leads to not only unhappiness with respect to wage discrepancies, it leads to workload problems. So we turned our minds to it in bargaining, and what we have at the moment in our collective agreement is not sufficient to deal with shortages. It's not sufficient to allow us to make adjustments, and in fact, currently, the employer can identify a shortage and introduce a market adjustment, but it's discretionary. And we saw with the case of the pharmacists last year in bargaining that the pharmacist adjustment was arbitrarily taken away by the employer, and we really did feel it was being used as a bargaining chip. So what we have done now is we have set in place a committee. It's a recruitment and retention committee. It is composed of equal membership from the Health Employers Association, which is the bargaining representative for the health authorities, and the HSPBA. Either the HEABC or the HSPBA, the union, can trigger a meeting of the committee. And if it is required to meet, then what the committee will do is consider initiatives to address concerns about professions which have been identified as having retention and recruitment issues. They can consider initiatives to address employee engagement. They can develop a joint proposal requesting a labor market adjustment. And that will then, of course, have to be approved, as everything that has to do with money in this province does, by the Ministry of Health and PSEC. However, there are criteria that the Public Sector Employer Council and the Ministry of Health will look at. It's necessary for the committee to demonstrate the issue is wage-related, explore other options to mitigate the recruitment and retention pressures, and do the work that's necessary to ensure that there is relevant market data. So all those things have to be done. They have to identify the occupations, the number of employees, and what the size of the market adjustments should be. But if that is all done, it will then be submitted to the Ministry of Health and the Public Sector Employer Council for approval. And the reality is that with many of our disciplines, there are shortages, and it is it has reached a fairly critical critical proportions in some facilities and in some health authorities. It's a real problem for the government. President Val Avery and I met with the Minister of Health last week, and it was identified at that meeting as one of the most important priorities for the Ministry of Health and, of course, for the Health Sciences Association of BC.
Thank you, Jeannie. We are now going to go to Felicia from Vancouver. Felicia, do you have a question for Jeannie Myers, please?
Yes, I do. Thank you. What guarantees are there that all members, whether full-time or part-time, will receive the 5.5% increase? In the last contract, we were told we would have a specific increase, and that was, you know, a specific percent per year, along with a change in our workday up to 7.5 hours. But, you know, I think as one of the other members mentioned, some of us didn't get that. So I just want to make sure that there aren't going to be any loopholes in this contract such that if I vote yes, I do get that 5.5% increase as a part-timer.
Yes, thank you. You absolutely do get the 5.5%. It's a general wage increase. It applies to all employees, whether full-time or part-time. And the economic stability dividend, if anything ends up coming of that, which we hope that it does, but there are no guarantees with respect to that. But that would also apply across the board, whether you are full-time or part-time. Thank you, Felicia.
I'll remind callers on the line that if you press 9, you will be put in the queue to ask questions. Our next caller is Pearl from Kelowna. Go ahead, Pearl.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to know if there's any changes happening as to how many times we can use our benefits, massage therapy, physiotherapy, chiropractic.
Thank you. There are no changes in this agreement to benefits such as physiotherapy or chiropractic or massage therapy. When we were first looking at the where to find the savings of 3.8, we certainly did hear from the government that they would like to look at various changes of that nature, but that was taken off the table, and there are no changes planned in the offing. Thank you.
Hey, Jeannie, I have a question that was left by a member. They said, I work in a child development center. Wage increases in the last contract weren't funded, and our employer can't afford the wage increase, so we've seen service cuts and layoffs. Is government going to fund this contract?
Without a doubt, this is a question that causes real concern for some of our members, particularly those who are not funded through the Ministry of Health, but who are funded through the Ministry of Child and Family Services. And we are engaged all the time, but never more so than now, in lobbying efforts to ensure that the necessity of providing the funding to comply with their obligations under the collective agreement are front and center for not just the Ministry of Health, but all funding agencies. The contract is a legally binding contract, and it needs to be funded. If the monies are not made available to health authorities or to affiliates, and it results in layoffs, then ultimately it's the people of the province that suffer, as well as the employees. And it has never been so important as it is now to make your voice heard, just as we try to make our voices heard in trying to contact MLAs and ensure that the government understands how critical it is to be providing funding for the critical services that you all offer for British Columbia.
Thank you, Jeannie. We're now going to go to Nicole in Mackenzie, BC. Nicole, do you have a question for Jeannie Myers, please?
I did. For when the Committee for Recruitment and Retention Issues, say they do come, and for example, I'm a combined lab and x-ray tech, but say they find a retention issue with just lab techs or just x-ray techs, and they get a raise, would the combined techs who happen to work in the same department get that raise as well, or is it just going to be for the full techs, like the full lab techs or full x-ray techs?
Go ahead, please, Jeannie.
Thank you. I'm fortunate to have with me Kathy McLennan, who has a wealth of experience working in classification issues and dealing in recruitment and retention types of issues. And so I think I'll ask her to address your question, if you will, Kathy.
Hi, Nicole. Thank you for your question. I would draw your attention to Appendix E of the tentative agreement that sets out the committee's responsibilities. And Jeannie alluded to it earlier in her comments. And part of the data that the government PSEC and would be looking for from the parties in any joint submission it makes for market adjustment
is to identify which occupations and the number of employees that will be affected by the adjustments. So in the example that you're giving, if in your capacity of a CLXP, is if either lab or X-ray were the subject of any labor adjustment market presentation, HSA would certainly want to make sure that any employee that's associated with those disciplines would be captured in that analysis and that data. It's a joint committee, so the committee would have to work together to come to whatever is jointly submitted, but that would be our position.
Thank you for that, Kathy. We're now going to go to Sally in New Westminster for our next question. Are you there, Sally, with a question for Jeannie Myers? Go ahead, please.
Thank you for taking my question. My question is, could you, the breakdown for the wage increase is the least in the first year and the most in the last year. Why didn't you do it the other way around?
What you see in the wage increases, which has the first 1% starting April 1st, 2015, if you have occasion to look at the government's information on mandate, you will see that the same wage increase is being offered throughout the public sector. And it is no increase in 2014 and the first 1% 2015. And it is what we call back-end loaded. It was not a round of negotiations in which the government was prepared to move off of its precise mandate.
Thank you, Jeannie. I'd remind callers on the line, if you wish to ask a question, you can press 9 on your phone. Our next question comes from Jamie in Victoria. Go ahead, please, Jamie.
Thank you. I'm just looking for more explanation about the economic stability dividend. I'm wondering what it is, how will we know that it actually exists, and be able to hold the government to account about whether there is one or not.
Thank you. I have with us this evening Julio Trujillo, and he has been involved in the discussions with respect to the economic stability dividend, and so I think I'll just ask you, Julio, if you're able to.
Sure. Thank you, Jeannie. The economic stability dividend is a new thing that the government has in conjunction with its wage controls for the next 5 years. What it does is it takes a look at the growth of the economy expressed as the gross domestic product. And there's a panel of economists in BC that are not government appointed, they're an independent body, that predicts every year how much the economy is going to grow and what the economic stability dividend will look like. The economic stability dividend is generated by the difference between what they predict the GDP is going to grow by and what it actually grows by. And if it grows by more than what was predicted, half of that excess will be applied to your wages as a wage increase. And that will be a wage increase that it's permanent and would be compounded by other wage increases.
Thank you, Julio. And thanks to all of you on the call for spending so much time with us this evening. Your questions tonight demonstrate to me once again how HSA members want to both provide good quality health care to British Columbians and work for an employer that values BC's health science professionals. Also, with thousands of participants on tonight's telephone town hall, it's clear to me that members are eager to engage with their union on important matters like those raised on tonight's call. I hope that we have been able to provide you with a better sense about how the proposed contract will affect you, and I encourage you to vote on this tentative agreement. Thank you again for joining the conversation this evening. If you have any questions that were not addressed in tonight's town hall, you will have a chance to leave me a message with your ideas, questions, or insights when we finish this portion of the conversation. For more information about the proposed contract, visit the HSA website at hsabc.org. Finally, I ask you to please take time, just one more minute, to leave me a message at the end of this call. Have a good evening.